Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and soon-to-be Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and reach us through our website, www.restaurantguysradio.com. You can also, like 30,000 other people a month right now, listen to our podcast on iTunes, or you can find out how to get there and how to do that through our website. And if you do that, you'll get our show sent to your computer every time we put one up on the air. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm great. I heard there's a new haunted restaurant opening up at Disney.
Well, I don't know. Is it at Disney? No, it's in Orlando.
Really. It's in Orlando, but it's not at Disney.
Mark and
it's
not
a show. It's not an attraction.
Mark and I had quite a chuckle this morning on the way in. It seems as though, here's an article from, I believe it's the Star Ledger, the New York Star Ledger, the owner of a downtown shopping complex in Orlando has filed a lawsuit against restaurateurs who say they cannot honor their lease because the building has a ghost problem. After the restaurant owners Christopher and Yoko Chung said they could not move into their new space on Church Street Station because of the apparitions the landlord offered, quite reasonably, to give them an exorcism of the property for free.
Hey, listen, that's what you got to do. Sometimes you got to exorcise your property.
David Simmons, the lawyer for the complex, said that they offered that. A lot of people have gotten a good laugh, he says, but it's not funny to my client. We expect to get paid. The landlord has already spent more than six figures on the renovation of the old building, which used to house a bar. The Chungs own a different restaurant, and we're moving in. Their new rent was going to be $14,175 a month. But the construction workers have reported to them seeing ghosts in the restaurant at night during the renovations.
Yeah, I get the feeling the Chungs had second thoughts about their lease. What do you think?
Well, two options. One, you're nuts. Two, I mean, they didn't even accuse the ghosts of, like, stealing anything or drinking liquor. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Here's another line. As a Jehovah's Witness, Mr. Chung has deeply held beliefs regarding spirits and demons. These beliefs require him to avoid demons at all costs.
You know what? My beliefs require me to avoid demons.
I am
everywhere I go, I'm like, oh, crud, a demon. I'm making a left instead of a right.
I'm a fallen Catholic, and I, confronted with a demon, would cross the street.
Go okay? The other way, at the
I'm
very
Mr.
least.
Chung, but you're going to have to pay your rent anyway.
come on, haunted restaurant. That's the best you got to get out of your lease. The restaurant's haunted, and I need to avoid demons at all costs. That's your defense?
I think that's a
pay
general.
Pay the bill. Pay the bill. Come on.
I think that's a general rule. Emilio San Martin, the owner of a company called Orlando Ghost Tours, said the spirits belonged to children who were illegitimate offspring of prostitutes and were killed in the property many years ago. Ms. Franklin said that the Chungs did not want to comment about the case, that they had approached the issue with due respect for the landlord and presumably the dead or
that's
the undead.
Extraordinary.
Come on, they're children. They're not even 21. They wouldn't even drink the booze. What's the problem? No. And there are ghosts. There are like haunted house tours that start at this place. Okay. You know what I want? That's not my restaurant.
I think they were afraid that maybe the restaurant was going to be a ghost town after they opened.
The
it.
Only thing I want more than a mob hit right outside our restaurant.
I do not. Hold on. Anybody listening? I do not want a mob hit outside.
I want
restaurant.
It so bad I may just put chalk lines out there with it not having happened and be like, oh, yeah, see what happened? I would love for my restaurant to get the reputation of being haunted. Love it. But you know what? Actually, I think I saw something last night banging around. So if you want to check it out, come on in to dinner. Come on, Mr. Chung.
Awful. Restaurant owners, I mean, we're crazy, okay? We're crazy people. To own a restaurant, you got to be a little bit nuts. You don't have to be that nuts.
Stage okay? Left. I think Stage Left is haunted, Mark. I heard a piano playing last night, and the chairs all got moved around.
I heard a piano playing, and I couldn't see a piano player, so it must be haunted.
It was the stereo and the waiters were moving the chairs around, Mr. Chung. Okay, here's another one. This is not haunted. This is just stupid. new restaurant opening in Manhattan.
I got news for you, Francis. The first one wasn't haunted. It was just stupid, too.
I'm not a man of mild opinions. New restaurant opening in Manhattan, and this is
it's going to be big. Going to be big, big, big.
Yeah, this is going to be 6,000 square feet.
In,
I want to give you people the ideas of it. A 6,000 square foot restaurant is a huge restaurant. That's like 300, 400 people for dinner. Okay, hold on.
6,000 is like 200, yeah, 250, something like that.
Oh,
yeah.
A lot. I'm bad with the numbers. Okay.
I'm good with the numbers. It's a lot of people, though, okay?
Here, ninjas are cool, or at least that's what owner Haru Yazaki, a well-known restaurateur in Japan, seems to think. His new 6,000-square-foot Tribeca restaurant, Ninja, is meant to evoke an 18th-century Japanese village where warriors once roamed. It may sound gimmicky. Yeah, it does. But this guy's serious. Yeah, okay. Walls in the dining room rotate to reveal secret nooks. Waiters wear the traditional black ninja robes and perform tableside magic acts. And diners must traverse a voice-activated bridge to get to their table. Okay.
I guess you don't complain about slow food there, huh?
Cut it out.
You don't ever complain about the service and, for fear of losing your hand.
But Chef Michinobu Okamoto, who apprenticed under Kichachi Kumagi,
you need to work on the Japanese a little bit.
You have no idea if I said that perfectly or totally messed it up. So let's go with it. Who apprenticed under the guy from the Iron Chef has conceived a menu that's both.
You've now changed names to the guy from the Iron Chef.
Strategic retreat is sometimes called for. It conceived a menu that's both amusing, squid ink breadsticks shaped like Japanese throwing blades. Amusing.
I'm amused.
I'm laughing at them, not with them. And refined. Octopus steamed in wine vinegar over sea scallops pictured. Bring your 8-year-old nephew and you'll both eat this place up. Yeah, my 8-year-old nephew really wants to go out for octopus steamed in wine and vinegar. It's
But he does want to throw a breadstick at somebody and have it plunge into their heart.
I don't get it. I don't know. Kids today.
Six
What's
months.
The world coming
go to that restaurant quick. Okay, everyone?
Sounds like a great idea.
Everyone, go. Anybody who is enthralled by the idea of going to the ninja restaurant, you should go very, very quickly.
Because
I get the feeling they're going to have ghosts soon.
But 6,000-square-foot restaurant. That's
is a
huge.
big place. That's bigger than Stage Left. That's bigger than Catherine Lombardi's going to be.
I tell you, these theme restaurants, I just don't get. You know there's that other restaurant, like Mars 2112 in Manhattan?
Yeah.
I brought my niece to that for her, like, 16th birthday party.
Did you learn your lesson?
I wanted to kill myself. It's like, oh, the Mars fries.
Now you wish that had been a ninja restaurant so you could have committed Harry Carey.
They're shaped like frying saucers.
That
and
was
they
funny.
Taste like
Come
carbon.
On.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You wish
restaurant.
That was a Japanese. I'll say it again for you.
No.
You wish that was a Japanese restaurant, so you could have committed Harry Carey.
No, yeah, exactly, with a breadstick. Okay, listen, we have a guest coming on the show. In the second part of the show, we have Nicholas Ferrari, who has recently been called by the New York Times the most highly regarded chef in New Jersey. He owns a restaurant, Nicholas, in Middletown, New Jersey. Just north of Red Bank, and he's a friend of ours, and he's a really talented chef and restaurateur. We'll be talking with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we have with us as a guest today another New Jersey restaurateur, Nicholas Ferrari from Restaurant Nicholas joins us on the phone. Hello, Nicholas.
Morning, Nick.
How's it going today?
Great.
How are you, man?
All right.
So, Nicholas, I want to read from the article that appeared in the New York Times just recently, and I want to explain to our audience the significance of this article. If you get the Times in New Jersey or in Long Island or in Westchester, there is a Jersey Weekly section on the Sunday paper, and there is a Long Island Weekly
section, right.
And a Westchester Weekly. Those are regional, and usually restaurants in those areas are talked about in the regional section. To be in the national section and not to be in New York or Chicago or L.A. is unusual, and because New Jersey is always thought of as the weak stepsister of New York, to have a New Jersey restaurateur featured in the national section of the New York Times, which is really the internationally distributed national section of the New York Times, is very uncommon. I don't ever remember it happening before. And Nicholas, you were written about in the Wednesday section of the Times just a couple of weeks ago. Pretty amazing stuff.
That's pretty big deal for you, huh?
Yeah, nobody was more shocked than I was.
Yeah, no, we were, Nick. We hate you. Actually, because we've been friends for a long time, I think we're probably the only restaurateurs in Jersey who don't hate you.
Yeah, you might actually be correct.
It's good to be hated for that stuff, though.
That's all right.
So anyway, have you found that people have taken more notice of the restaurant since you get a lot of international press like that?
Yeah, I think so. The restaurant has been a lot busier. A lot of New York license plates in the parking lot. A lot of 212 and 917 and 201 numbers in our reservation book.
Mm-hmm. So now all your customers now know that you walk the parking lot to check out the cars that are out there.
No, he hires someone to
it's
do that.
It's a full-service restaurant. We're checking on your cars.
Yeah.
Actually, I just want to read from the article. There's a lot of interesting stuff that it talked about you, and we thought this article was great, and we were, you know, your biggest cheerleaders. But here's the line that I envy you for. Mr. Harari's youthful culinary ambitions were born, ambitions that have distinguished him as perhaps the most highly regarded chef in New Jersey. That's cool stuff, man.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And you're only like 15 years old.
Yeah. Think about what I'll do by the time I'm 21. Yeah, there was a woman sitting at a table in my restaurant. It was one of the nights that I was in the dining room in a suit as opposed to being in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman was asking me, 15, 20 questions. I said to her, what are you doing, an interview? And I was joking, and she said, yes, actually, I'm writing a story on you. And I said, oh, and I laughed a little bit, and I said, for what? And she said, the New York Times, and then I got serious.
And then all of a sudden,
I stopped laughing.
And at this point, I didn't know if she was kidding, because I was joking back and forth, because mm-hmm. she had asked who's in the kitchen. I said, my brother Nicholas. It was a joking back and forth. And she said, the New York Times, so I got a little serious, but I wasn't sure, was she still kidding?
Right.
I didn't want to be, you know, had a joke played on me.
Right.
And then she handed me her card, and I said, when is it going to appear? And she said, next Wednesday. And I said, I thought the Jersey section only came out on Sundays. And she said, what's the Jersey section? That's actually true. And I said, the Jersey section that comes on Sundays. She said, no, I write for the New York Times, not for the Jersey Times. And I said, okay. I said, like in the dining out section? And she said, yes. And I said, well, now I know you're kidding. And she gave me her business card, and apparently she was not kidding.
That's well, just so everybody knows, we're talking to Nicholas Harari of Restaurant Nicholas in Middletown, just north of Red Bank. And we're talking about an article that came out about him in the national section of the New York Times, which I don't know of any Jersey restaurateur who's had a feature article written about him or her in the national pages of the time. And we just think that's really great.
So, Nicholas, you were just alluded to the fact that you were on the floor one night as opposed to in the kitchen. You operate kind of a peculiar role in your restaurant and a little bit unusual in that you are the executive chef as well as the maitre d' of the restaurant. And I've actually been there on nights where I've seen you kind of duck into the kitchen, put a chef coat on, duck out of the kitchen, put your jacket back on, and be performing both roles at the same time.
Right. Well, typically I don't perform both on the same night, although some nights I do. Typically, certain nights I'll start in the kitchen and end up and stay in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And then other nights I will start in my suit and stay in my suit. Very rarely do I switch, but there are occasions that I do switch in the middle. And I do it because I want to keep my staff sharp on both sides of the wall. Since I'm trained in both, and it just feels more natural to me. I think I get to be with the customers on certain nights and be with my staff in the kitchen on other nights. And it just works for me. It's peculiar because I don't know of any other place that actually that happens in. It's one of the things that the Times was most interested in. I don't do it as a gimmick. I just do it because it feels comfortable to me. And what feels uncomfortable to me is to be in my chef's uniform in the dining room, which is more typical of what you see. But since I'm also a sommelier and the wine buyer of the restaurant, if I was to walk up to a table in my uniform, I just feel I don't get the natural response.
Not the same.
It's not the same. They feel, I don't want to say intimidated, but lately with this celebrity chef thing going on in the world and the Food Network and all that, it seems like people treat chefs differently than they used to.
Right.
And I don't want people to treat me differently. I want you to get the wine that, you know, works best for your dinner and make.
Well, you are different though, Nick.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
I think that was a dig there, Nicholas. But
you take that however you'd like.
That's fair enough.
I have to tell you, I had a similar experience about a month and a half ago in the summertime. Mm-hmm. You know about playing different roles in the restaurant.
Right.
The valet didn't show up.
That's funny.
I swear to God. And there was one valet instead of two, and the cars are backing up, so I jumped out there and parked cars, but nobody wants me cooking in the kitchen, I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, but you know what? Francis is like, okay, you, person who busses tables for me, you get in the Impala. Me, I'm going to take the Maserati.
Exactly.
Okay, see, we're going to park now.
You know you're a restaurant with valet parking when you've had to park cars yourself. You know you're the owner because I've done it too.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is. You know, you also have a great advantage of having your wife working with you in the restaurant and working on the floor with you there is I think, a great benefit.
Definitely.
That's somebody
because
you can have.
The nights that I'm in the kitchen, I don't have to worry if the people are being taken care of properly in the dining room, are they being recognized? And one of the things that we really focus in, and we think recognition of people, whether you recognize them from being there before or recognize them for having a special occasion that night at the restaurant, mm-hmm. we think recognition is probably the number one thing that separates good restaurants from great restaurants.
Well, people want to go out to our restaurants for a special evening or for something unusual or for something special. So they need to be treated that way.
And people want restaurants to be a locus of community, which is why people still go to restaurants that are individually owned. Our guest is Nicholas Harari. He's been recently called by the New York Times, the national section, the most highly regarded chef in New Jersey. And we certainly agree. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Today we have with us restaurant owner Nicholas Harari, who owns a great little restaurant called Restaurant Nicholas in Middletown, just outside of Red Bank.
Actually, you have three restaurant guys today for the price of two, if you're listening out there in listener land. Nicholas, when you came out of the different places you had, why did you choose to come to New Jersey to open your place rather than to work into New York, where you certainly could have if you chose New York?
Well, there was a couple of things. We wanted to own our own property so that we can expand the restaurant when if needed. That wasn't going to be possible in New York City. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do it by ourselves. When I say by ourselves, I mean my wife and myself. We did not want any investors. That was definitely not going to be possible. I was 26 years old. I literally, you know, had just a handful of money to start my own restaurant, and I went to the SBA, and the SBA guaranteed the loan to the bank, and we were able to open Restaurant Nicholas. In New York City, since I wouldn't have owned the property, the SBA never would have given me that loan. We lived in La Jolla, California, a very wealthy community. We thought about opening a restaurant there. We looked in Westchester. We thought about opening a restaurant there, Greenwich, Connecticut. The area that we chose had something that all of those areas didn't have, and it had direct access to New York City. And mm-hmm. most of my area who works in New York travel in by the high-speed ferry. So it's a 30, 35-minute luxury ride in, stress-free, and it's an area that the people dine in New York on a regular basis, only they live in New Jersey. So.
Sure. I think also that some people don't realize that one of the huge benefits that we have is being not just the client base, which is used to going out in a restaurant in Manhattan and that style of restaurant, which is wonderful, of course, but also the access to all the products that are in Manhattan.
That's true. And, you know, I get asked that all the time. How come you didn't open in Manhattan? How come you didn't open in Manhattan? And the answer is financial. There's no question mm-hmm. that's the answer. It's a financial decision. Today, if I wanted to open in Manhattan, I could open in Manhattan, and I wouldn't have the investors that I was trying to avoid the first time. We're not looking to do that right now. We just expanded Restaurant Nicholas, and we've been open for 5 years, and we've had critical success as well as financial business success, and we're happy here, and that's where we're going to stay for the time being.
You know, it's an interesting thing, Nicholas, because our restaurant, as you know, everyone in the audience should know that, in the spirit of full disclosure, Nicholas and Mark and I are good friends and colleagues and have a lot of respect for each other. And one of the things that I think is interesting, you being in Red Bank, being 30 minutes away by ferry, longer by car, and us, our restaurant being in New Brunswick, we also have a similar kind of clientele we draw on, is you need to be far enough away from Manhattan, because I live in Jersey City, and it's very interesting because it's hard if you're that close to Manhattan to open up a great restaurant, because people say, well, I'm all the way here. I'm at the mouth of the Holland Tunnel.
I'll be in Manhattan.
Yeah, why am I not going to go through? I think you need to be a certain distance away, too, don't you think, Nick?
I agree, and that was definitely one of our thoughts. I mean, obviously Hoboken would have clientele that dines in New York all the time, but we looked at it, and we just kind of analyzed it, and we said, you know what? That's what makes this area so special. One of the people is working in New York, say they took the high-speed ferry in. The spouse isn't going to come in and join them at 7:30 for dinner, whether it be an anniversary or special occasion, because they can't take the high-speed ferry in at that time.
But if they live in Hoboken or Jersey City, they'll just jump on the PATH train, and there they are. Our guest is Nicholas Harari from Restaurant Nicholas in Middletown, New Jersey. He was recently called by the New York Times the most highly regarded chef in New Jersey, and we'll be talking more with him after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or you can download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today, our guest is Nicholas Harari. Nicholas and his wife, Melissa, own Restaurant Nicholas in Middletown, New Jersey, just north of Red Bank. And he was called by the national section of the New York Times just a couple of weeks ago the most highly regarded chef in New Jersey. We regard him pretty highly, but I don't know. He's a pretty good poker player, as a matter of fact. Nicholas, how are you?
Doing well.
I understand that you have, we talked before the break about one of the reasons that you decided to open in New Jersey was that, rather than in New York, was that you could purchase the property and then if things went well, you could expand. Well, that's happened now a few years later, and you're just expanding now, aren't you?
That is correct. We're just finishing up our expansion project.
What are you doing?
We built a new kitchen, a kitchen that you would expect from a restaurant at the level of Restaurant Nicholas. It's a display kitchen. We have two chef's tables in the kitchen where people can dine.
Mm-hmm.
We built a new bar and lounge with 16 bar stools and 6 cocktail tables so that people can come in and have a we have a small plates menu. It's almost like tapas, but a little bit more formal than tapas at the bar. And then
more Nicholas-esque.
There you go.
There we go.
And then we put in a new dining room, a new entrance. And
so just a few small little touches here and there is what you're saying.
It's a new paint shop.
Now, you know what's funny? We've been friends for a long time, and our lives parallel oddly sometimes. And while you've been under construction, we've been under construction.
Yeah, we should tell everybody. We actually, Nicholas and we, call each other back and forth
at midnight
every couple of days to talk horror construction stories.
Now, we have coming on the show later in the week, we have Rudolf Chaminski, who wrote the book The Perfectionist, which is about the French chef Loiseau, who killed himself because he thought he might lose a star and because of the way his business was going. You know, with construction, that is maybe the hardest time because we're both operating our existing restaurants while building more restaurant, and while I have never been tempted to kill myself, I have been tempted to kill others several times during this process. How about you?
Well, you know, it's a time where things can go wrong, and they naturally will go wrong. The difference between our two projects is you're building a restaurant above your restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so I'm building a restaurant simultaneously on top of my restaurant.
Yeah, you're working, and Francis and I have done this before, and it is, I'll tell you, much harder to try and operate a restaurant that's being worked on at the same time.
Right. We've had a great construction crew, and they've built temporary access points. My customers don't realize when they're in the dining room that there's construction going on.
Exactly.
It's all going on in a separate building next to the restaurant. It's just that we have to attach the two, which has been completed at this point. I think that you have to go into a project like this knowing that there are going to be things that come up on a daily basis, and we definitely have them come up.
Mm-hmm.
And my construction foreman said to me the other day, he said, I don't understand how you never yell, you never get upset about this kind of stuff. And that probably goes to my poker playing. You can't let them know what you're thinking,
yeah.
You know, and because, you know, it's not anyone's fault. There's no way this is going to go as smoothly as you would like. And I tell Melissa all the time because she, you know, she does feel the stress more than I do on this. And the staff, I tell them every day what's going to be happening over the next couple of weeks of construction. And we try to get people prepared for it. But, yeah, it's definitely... you know, it's interesting. I'll write a book on it someday.
Yeah, I think one of the things that to be a great restaurant owner, you need to be a control freak. You need to want to be controlling everything that's happening in your restaurant. And during construction, you're completely out of control. You've put yourself in someone else's hands, and you've put yourself in this situation where you're going to be looking through literally doors that are closed, and you have to get to the other side of those doors.
Yeah, it's like riding the mechanical bull, you know? I recall when we did our most recent renovations on Stage Left, which is the existing restaurant, we closed off two rooms and just gutted them and put in new walls and new ceiling and the whole... But you had to go... And we had the kitchen operational, and we had one room operational, but you had to pass through this obstacle course of a construction site, and it was covered with dust everywhere. And we realized halfway through one night that dust was getting on the waiter's shoes as they were walking through this place, and there was no way to avoid it. And so we set up a mat where the waiters would, like, you know, stomp their feet on the mat before they would walk in to keep from tracking footprints all over
the place. Then we started beating the waiters like a rug.
Did you have any close calls of things that almost spoiled the show?
No, I would say we have not had any of those kinds of incidents. I've had incidents where we thought we weren't going to be able to open because they were more serious than what you're talking about. But we never had the servers walking through construction because we were building a new kitchen.
Right.
So we built the new kitchen, got it done, and then gutted our old kitchen. So that's why we didn't have that problem. But I definitely had issues where, oh, yeah, if you don't get this inspection in time, you're not going to open tonight because...
I was watching a show late last night, a repeat of the show The Restaurant, which was Rocco Spiritu's
reality TV failed
restaurant called Rocco's in New York City, and a lot of that show was very unreal, but one of the true reality scenes that I recall, it's the night before Rocco's supposed to open, and he walks into the restaurant where there are supposed to be 40 people working to get 24 hours straight in order to get him open the next day. He was calling through the restaurant. He's going through his cavernous restaurant. Nobody there. Is anybody here? Is anybody?
Four guys eating a sandwich.
Gets to the back room, and there are four guys there. And one guy sitting there, and he's waving a French fry, and he's like, yeah, the plumber. And he's literally, the French fry is flopping in the wind as he's talking with it. And he's like, yeah, the plumber said he had to leave because the electrician didn't do what he had to do before he left. And the tile guy said, well, if the plumber's not going to do his thing, I can't do my thing. And so they're all coming back tomorrow.
That definitely comes about.
That particular scene actually made me nauseous.
You know, what do you think of these restaurant reality shows, Nicholas? We live in restaurant reality. What do you think of the shows?
I enjoy them.
Yeah?
I do. I thought that show, The Restaurant, the first season was great.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed
it. I think that particular episode that you're talking about was amazing because it definitely was true. I think the second season went downhill a bit on that.
Uh-huh.
I think that Hell's Kitchen was great.
Oh, I couldn't stand that show.
I thought Gordon Ramsay was a jerk.
You're not a chef.
Are you saying that I would think you were a jerk if we worked together?
I would say that you would have a healthy respect for me. I would say you might have a healthy fear of me as well. And you know what? I've never made fun of someone's weight. I've never called their mother names.
Right.
But I've definitely gotten my cook's faces.
Yeah, but that's different. That's different. Number one.
Because I've definitely yelled the entire night long.
I didn't have any problem with that. The problem I had was the whole premise of the show. Bringing some untrained people who've never worked in a restaurant before and said, okay, make a souffle.
Right, right. Oh, it's not right.
because it was fun to watch them yell and the guys in my kitchen, they love quoting Gordon. The thing about that, most of the public, I don't know if they realize this, Gordon Ramsay is considered one of the greatest chefs in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And because they threw him on this reality show, people are like, is he just a joker? No, he's a real chef. And so when you have a respect for someone and then you see him in that position, I can see how he would yell all day long. I gotta
ask you, when we come back, I want to ask you, now the winner of that show was offered either the possession of $1 million restaurant outright or a job in Gordon Ramsay's kitchen, and he declined the restaurant and took the job. I want to know whether you think that was a wise move or not.
I'll answer that now, or...
why don't we keep people teased, and we'll answer that when we come back from the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Our guest is Nicholas Harari, who owns Restaurant Nicholas and has been called by the New York Times the most highly regarded chef in New Jersey. This is The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:45. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott, a stage left restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here talking with our friend Nicholas Harari, who was recently called by the New York Times the most highly regarded chef in New Jersey. Nicholas, it sticks in my craw every time I say that, but I need to be fair. And he owns Restaurant Nicholas in Middletown, New Jersey, which is not too far away, and it's Mark and my favorite restaurant in the state, after our own, of course. We asked you before the break, we were talking about restaurant reality shows, and in this restaurant reality show with Gordon Ramsay,
Hell's Kitchen.
This pot-throwing, screaming maniac of a chef, at the end of the show, and he's very important, he's a Michelin 3-star chef in England, at the end of the show, the person who won the prize was $1 million restaurant, free and clear, given to him. And Gordon Ramsay said at the end, you know, here's your $1 million restaurant, but you've impressed me so much that if you want, instead of the million-dollar restaurant I'm going to hand you, you can have a job in my restaurant in England. And the guy took the job. What are your thoughts on that, Nick?
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, figuratively, I don't know that I would do that. But if you think of what a million-dollar restaurant is, you know you're renovating one. It may have been a strip mall restaurant.
Right. but sell it for $1 million.
Then go apply for a job at Gordon Ramsay's restaurant.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, through young chefs' careers, you have to work with great chefs. And if that particular person hasn't had that opportunity yet, it may benefit him in the long run. If you have $1 million restaurant that fails inside of a year, you have a nothing, right?
Yeah, except that, hold on a second. I have to disagree with you.
$1 million restaurant.
He's an idiot. Here's why I think he's an idiot.
$1 million.
Number one, take that $1 million restaurant, immediately sell it for $800,000. Put $800,000 in the bank. And you also, I mean, talk about having trouble getting a job working for a great chef. You just won the reality show
right.
that everybody in America
and Gordon
saw.
Ramsay offered you a job on TV.
Right, and you said no.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we're talking about a particular incident. We don't have all the facts on that.
Listen, Nicholas,
it's a reality show. We don't have any of the facts,
yeah.
Nick.
Nicholas, this is talk radio. We don't need any facts.
Right, that's why, figuratively, I don't know that I would make that same decision, but we don't know everything that was put into it. But if the question is, would I give up a lot to work with Gordon Ramsay?
$1 million. $1 million.
Well, yeah, I probably would not.
Okay, that's all. You've answered my question, yeah. Senator. You may step off the stand. Okay, I have to ask you, now you installed a chef's table in your restaurant, so you now have two tables in the kitchen where people can eat.
Sorry.
I will tell you that I love that idea. I understand that people want to see that. The Inn at Little Washington was my favorite little chef's table. That's in super high-end restaurants, we have a show kitchen like that. It's really great for people to see that. I can't stand it. As a restaurateur, I never want to eat in the kitchen. I always feel like I'm being punished. I always want to eat in the dining room.
Yeah, we've done it a couple of times, and
our partners love it.
And literally,
your partner doesn't work specifically in the restaurant on a daily
basis.
Right, right.
It doesn't work in a kitchen going, hey, what's that over there? Hey, what's that over there?
Right, let me tell you
why. They're doing that wrong.
Let me tell you why it works and why we wanted to do it.
Uh-huh.
I think it's like you're pulling back the curtain so people can see how it's really done.
Sure.
Quite often, when I'm in the dining room, as we talked before, and I'm in a suit, and they're like, well, if you're in here, who could be cooking in the kitchen?
Right,
and
right.
I said,
right.
And then I usually say, the 12 guys that work for me.
Right, right, right. They have the vision that it's like big night with one guy in the back.
They always think that I'm back there by myself throwing pots and pans around, mm-hmm. Making their food.
It's definitely a team effort.
Right, and I don't think they realize that running a restaurant like Restaurant Nicholas, there's 30 people working at Restaurant Nicholas.
Sure.
We only seat 70 people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it pulls back the curtain so they can really see what is happening in that kitchen. And you can see that there are a lot of young cooks that are school-trained cooks that are just beginning their apprenticeship in this business. There are some older people who've been doing this for a while and have worked for me for a length of time. They can see how a high-level restaurant is orchestrated throughout the evening. And I think that's one of the reasons that people enjoy it. I think with what has happened on the Food Network, people are more interested in food, you know, two guys like you can get a radio show. People are obviously.
Well, people, you know, we were just talking for a second ago about, you know, unreal reality TV and what is sitting in the kitchen. It is. That's real life.
That's reality.
And you're in the middle of it. And that's part of what I don't like about it. It is my real life.
Yeah.
I go to a restaurant to escape.
Can I sit in the dining room?
Guys, I understand. You couldn't pay me enough money to sit in someone's kitchen.
I know.
Right.
But I do this for a living.
Right. We're in the kitchen every day.
Last time we were out to dinner with wives and girlfriends and a couple of friends of ours, and everybody was like, oh, it's so wonderful to sit in the kitchen. And Mark and I are looking at each other like, the dining room's so nice. They have curtains and windows. And why are we sitting in the kitchen? And it was great. I mean, it was really a great time. But, I'm all stressed watching this all happen.
Right,
I want to get
exactly.
up and help expedite or, you know, watch what's going on. So you feel the same way?
Personally,
yeah.
I wouldn't sit in the kitchen to have dinner because I wouldn't feel comfortable because you're absolutely right. Typically, when I go to a restaurant, I like to be the person facing the wall.
Really?
And that's true because I'm constantly, my eyes are moving back and forth and seeing what's going on. and I can tell you 15 things that just happened in the dining room.
That's it, exactly.
And I'm sitting there trying to have my anniversary dinner with my wife.
That's right.
Let me just face the wall, please.
Happy anniversary. The guy.
Did you see that?
He just misseared that tuna.
Yeah. But sometimes I'm noticing good things that people have done, too. Very rarely, but
You know what's funny is we will go out with friends. Mark and I will go out with friends, and we've really tamed this back a lot in recent years. But in the beginning, and even before we owned our own place, because I'm fascinated with the mechanics of how a restaurant works. And when we go to a restaurant, we're like, oh, did you see that? Oh, look at that person brought that over. Oh, they served from the wrong side. Did you see what's going on over there? And our friends once, and this is when we realized we had to pull it back, we had some friends who said to us as we were leaving, they said, and we went to this great restaurant, we had a great time, and our friends said, yeah.
It was a restaurant our friends had recommended.
And they said, yeah, listen, we're sorry you guys had such a lousy time. We thought it was a good restaurant. And we were like, no, we had a great time.
No,
it was super, you know. But we were analyzing every little thing, and that's just not how – that's not a really great way to dine in a restaurant, I don't think. But you're the same way, I know.
Right.
Well, we dine out together, so we do the same thing.
Yeah, and in a kitchen environment where people are watching it, like I said, it is a show. People can see that, and is it a show that I'd want to see? No, because I see it every day
right.
of my life.
Right.
But I understand the importance of something like this. I think people want to see your wine cellar. I think people want to see the inner workings of what makes a restaurant great. And I think that's just a natural transition. And when we had the opportunity to build a new kitchen, I said, let's go in and put a display kitchen in, one where, you know, it's loaded with marble and high-polished stainless steel and brass and all the showpieces, and that's what we did.
Well, I think people, when they sit in your kitchen, Nicholas, are going to really, truly be amazed by what they see, everything that goes into doing the things that you do in your dining room. I think people are going to be amazed to see how much goes into it.
And it's not just the New York Times. I mean, Restaurant Nicholas, we'll put a link up to Nicholas's website on our website a little bit later today. We recommend the restaurant highly. It's our favorite restaurant in New Jersey that we go out to where we don't have to worry about when things go wrong. It's all Nicholas's problem. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest is Nicholas Ferrari from Restaurant Nicholas in Middletown, New Jersey. Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, and our guest today was Nicholas Ferrari, who owns Restaurant Nicholas in Red Bank, New Jersey. Nick, thanks for joining us on the show today. Nicholas?
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks,
Adam. You got to be polite now, man. Congratulations on your article in the Times. That was really, really swell. Green with envy.
Very happy for you. Some of us are green with envy. Some of us were just happy for you.
I'm both. So we'll send some people your way. And when I come to your restaurant, can I sit in the dining room?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're in Jersey for two nights, you want to go to Stage Left one night, and then you want to go to Nicholas night number two.
Fair enough.
Thanks a lot, Nicholas. Take care.
Nicholas.
Have a good day, guys.
All right, bye-bye. Well, he's a really interesting guy, and he's a very, very, very talented restaurateur and chef, and I recommend his restaurant wholeheartedly.
And obviously a really good friend of ours, for those of you who didn't notice.
He hit on a point that he talked about when you know, we talked about chef's tables, and he said one of the things that people like about a chef's table is, you know, you pull the curtain back, and you see that, you know, there are 12 people in the kitchen. And I think it's interesting, in the kind of food that he cooks and the kind of food that we cook at Stage Left, people say, you know, well, why are your entrees $40? Mm-hmm. You know, why does dinner for two cost $150
to $200? Right, the steak only costs $15. Why is it $38 on your menu?
Right. And, you know, why does dinner for two at this restaurant $75 or $100? And part of it are the things that we do. I mean, we spend tens of thousands of dollars a year on glassware breakage, so because we have perfect glassware and linen and artwork and all kinds of stuff like that. But a lot of it is there need to be five or six really talented, preferably culinary school graduates in the kitchen
at least,
plus other people helping in hands.
Right, and apprentices behind them.
When we open this Italian restaurant that we're opening, the food is going to be great. It's going to be less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main reasons it's going to be less expensive is because I need two really talented guys in the kitchen.
Yeah, probably three.
Maybe three. Well, you know, three with talent, two really talented guys. I need a bunch of hands because the nature of that cuisine,
it's in the preparation. You need your skill in the afternoon getting those things ready. I say it all the time. Grandma Lombardi started on Tuesday
right.
for Sunday's for Sunday's meal. That's when she started cooking, you know, rolling the dough and filling the ravioli. And
right.
And
if she had to come up with 9-course meals with foie gras and flashed fish and right. soufflés, you know, that is all what they call, you know, a la minute. Mm-hmm. To be
and the meal was designed so that she could be part of the day.
Exactly, and sit down and enjoy
she
the was, meal.
I mean, not that she sat down very much because she really didn't.
Well, so, but you should, and you should go out to a great restaurant like Stage Left or Nicholas, and we'll give you information on how to get to Nicholas from our website, which is restaurantguysradio.com. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. This is Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.